Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. You're listening to Show Me Common Sense. I am Von Carriker. Sorry, we had a little bit of technical difficulty right there. I don't think I was heard for about 20 seconds, which, of course, the people who hate me would say that's great. But listen, tonight, such a treat I have for you. We have Bill Randles, who is running for governor of this great state of Missouri. Now, we've got the governor's primary race coming up this fall. Jay Nixon, the incumbent, I believe, is running unopposed. He's challenged by William Campbell and, I believe, Clay Thunderhawk, two men of whom I know absolutely nothing. Now, on the Republican side, we've got, four candidates, I believe, at this point. We've got Bill Randles, who's going to be our guest tonight. He is an attorney and an investor out of Western Missouri. We've got Fred Sauer, a pro-life activist and the U.S. House of Representatives candidate from the 2010 election. We've got Dave Spence, who's also a Republican and a plastics manufacturing executive. John Wheeler, a sales manager who ran in 2004. And on the Libertarian side, we've got two candidates. We've got Jim Higgins from the I can't tell you what part of Missouri he's from. He's an ex-state party vice chair, and he's a computer systems analyst, and he frequently runs for office. And we've got Libertarian Leonard Steinman, who is a salvage dealer and a frequent candidate. Now, the primaries, the Republican primaries, are going to take place in August. July is going to be a big push. I can tell you right now, you are going to be absolutely sick of hearing from people, political ads, commercials, posters, yard signs, people coming to your door, people calling you on the phone. I can't even pick up my phone in the evening anymore. I'm afraid of who's online. I can tell you this, though. There is nothing more important than being able to vote in the United States of America. We really do have it pretty good here in this country. I think that some of the issues that have affected countries who've been in existence for so many centuries more than we have yet to touch these soils. I think that as free people, as truly free people, we have more power to influence the future of our state, our county, our local government, and our country than any other nation in the world. If you can just see, if you've read about it, any of the chaos that's gone on in Greece for the past several months, people rising and falling, heads rolling, jobs lost, people standing in food lines, politics interfering with common sense, there's just nothing to compare with that in the United States. We still manage to, for the most part, feed our own, take care of our own, look out for our own, and still do it for other countries as well. For the time being, we are still the most powerful nation in the world, even though sometimes it looks as if our government is running on fumes. And we certainly have our individual struggles here. Missourians are facing some of the highest unemployment rates in the country. We are number 49 in jobs creation. We've accepted a bunch of stimulus money, and that's kind of had us over a barrel for a while, because once that stimulus money goes, what do we use to fill in the gaps? And Missouri is one of those states that has a balanced budget amendment. No matter what happens, we got to balance that budget every year. We've got to account for that money going in and coming out, and we've got to make it work somehow. We are in crunch time, ladies and gentlemen. We are struggling. And we put the bravest face on it that we possibly could, but I don't think we can afford to do that anymore. And what we need in this country, in my opinion, and in the state of Missouri, is we need strong leadership without politics taking the forefront. We need strong government leaders. We need representatives, people who listen and who help, people who listen and who do, people who think and then act. And what we've got is a full field of candidates who claim to do just that very thing. But, you know, records speak for themselves, and we'll wait and see what happens with some of these candidates. But for tonight, we're going to talk to one of them. We're going to talk to Bill Randles, a scrappy kid from the Ozarks who grew up in a trailer park and pulled himself up from the lower class to become an awesome lawyer, an awesome, awesome minister, and you can tell I'm a fan, a great campaigner for the state of Missouri. We're going to take just a brief break. If you want to call in and ask questions of Bill Randles, feel free. The number is 347-677-1835. Please call, talk to him. You'll find it well worth your time. I'm Von Carriker. You are listening to Show Me Common Sense on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it. I've got a feeling
that the tide is turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Good morning, or rather, is it good evening? I can't tell when it's daylight anymore. I'm Von Carriker. You're listening to Show Me Common Sense on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we're going to welcome our guest, Bill Randles. Bill, welcome to the show.
Oh, good to be here.
Now, Bill, you are a Republican candidate for governor of this great state of Missouri. Why in the world would you do that?
Well, you know, at times that's a question I ask myself, but you know, I've spent my life in the private sector, making my own way. But like a lot of folks, I've gotten fed up with the direction of this state and this country. I've waited in vain for a real vision from the conservative leadership out there, and I've waited in vain for politicians to do what they said. So I finally decided I couldn't sit on the sidelines anymore, and I got involved.
Now, Bill, you talk about conservative leadership. It seems like it's such a dirty word today. You got liberals pitted against conservatives, everyone pitted against the Tea Party, libertarians seemingly on the sidelines being ignored. What does it mean to be a conservative in Missouri?
Well, that is a fair point. You know, words often get stretched beyond their meanings, but my definition of conservatism is a fairly traditional one, that you believe that people should largely manage their own affairs, the government should just do the essential services that we can't do for ourselves, and generally stay out of our way. And that's my definition of conservatism. I think it works pretty well. And I think we have to be very careful about balkanizing ourselves into a bunch of different groups. And one of the things I've worked hard at over the last 18 months is unifying all aspects of the Republican Party and the conservative movement, because we've got more in common than we have differences.
Now, Bill, I'm going to touch on that word unifying. I think, and actually I'm going to step outside the state for a little bit. I remember well the excited talk along the Beltway that spread to the media that the president was going to be the great unifier. He's going to be able to reach across the aisle and bring consensus and get things done. And as you and I and pretty much everyone else in the world knows, that just didn't happen. How are you going to do that if you become governor in the state of Missouri?
Well, I would first observe that Barack Obama's talk of unification was pure cynicism. You know, I've known the fellow since law school, and from the first position he was elected to, editor-in-chief of the Harvard Law Review, he got there with a racially divisive election strategy, and then he went through the Chicago political machine and community organizing. So that was one of those head feints the left gives you, like, you know, the Affordable Care and Patient Choice Act, meaning that it will become much more expensive and you won't have a choice at all. But in terms of my background, you know, unlike Obama and others who just talk about slogans and try to make you feel good, I'm trying to unify people around ideas and a real clear, cogent plan for victory. I mean, you have seen my website and my campaign literature, which I've handed out by the thousands, and my speeches, where I don't spend a lot of time on soaring rhetoric. I give people real, concrete solutions, practical solutions to how we get government off our back. And I think that's what will unify people, not happy talk and drivel.
Okay. BillRandles.com is the name of that website. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Bill Randles, BillRandles. You're listening to Missouri's Grassroot Radio Network, and Show Me Common Sense. I'm on with Bill Randles, who's running for governor on the Republican ticket. Now, Bill, first thing you do, you get elected. What's that going to be?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is submit my package of economic reforms to the legislature, which will include right to work, judicial reform, regulatory reform, and eliminating the income tax. There will be other pieces with it, like combining agencies, but I think the most urgent thing is to restructure our state into a business-friendly environment. And right after that, I will begin standing up to the federal government in key areas like education and the environment.
Right to work is a touchy, touchy subject in Missouri. Why do you think that right to work would benefit the state at all?
Well, at the beginning of this year, there were 22 right-to-work states. During this so-called economic recovery, all of the net job growth in this country has occurred in the 22 right-to-work states. During the 2010 census, all of the increase in representation also occurred in the 22 right-to-work states. Businesses are fleeing closed-shop states because, not just because of that labor policy, but because of the view of control and interference with business it represents. And most businesses, when they're scouting a new location, the first or second question on the list is it a right-to-work state? And if the answer is no, they won't even consider it. And we've seen that in Missouri. I grew up in Arkansas, which is a right-to-work state. We were one of the poorest states in the nation when I was growing up, and everybody wanted to come to Missouri. Now that's flipped, and Arkansas is substantially more prosperous than Missouri because of a more business-friendly atmosphere.
Well, I'll tell you something. It's really interesting. I see in the Missouri legislature and even in our local government a desire to do whatever it takes to attract business here. It's almost as if the government acts like what I call a turn row girl, which is a girl
yeah.
who, you know what I'm talking about. You're a country boy.
I do.
A turn row girl, for the people who are listening and have no idea what I'm talking about, is that girl you wouldn't necessarily want to be seen with in public, but you have no problem hitting a turn road at night when nobody's around to know that you're standing with her. You don't acknowledge her in public. And I see that government in Missouri and at local, state, what have you, even the federal government, have turned themselves into turn road girls. They're so eager to bring jobs to their areas that they do whatever they think is necessary, whether or not that is the right thing to do or whether or not there's even a shot that it will work. Have you seen that?
Oh, absolutely. And to take your analogy one step further, that's not the basis of a long-term relationship. That's not who you take home to meet mom. And the businesses are going for the long term to states with a business-friendly atmosphere. I was talking to a group of union guys about right to work, and I said, look at Michigan. There's been an exodus of jobs, and you don't have to guess where they went. They went to Tennessee and Alabama.
Well, that's amazing, and I think there's some truth to that. What would you tell or say to a union person who doesn't understand about the exodus of jobs from closed shop states? What would you say to them? Because I think the first question they'd ask is, what's in it for me?
Well, what's in it for you is a market where there's actually competition for your services. You may be right. You may today, at the one business left in town, have a relatively high-paying job. But you're as trapped there as a person can be. Wouldn't you rather have the option of three or four or five jobs in town in case something happens to your shop or your work environment? And that's the difference between closed shop states and right-to-work states. Right-to-work states have, on average, more jobs, higher economic growth, and more job opportunities. And that's the long-term view. The short-term view isn't, well, this is a pretty lousy deal, but I'm going to hang on to it for dear life. What you want is a vibrant economy whereby you and everyone else's services are being bid for, and the water raises all boats. And that short-term destructive thinking is why unionization rates in this country have plunged, especially in the private sector.
Okay. I can see that. I think the numbers have dropped by 50% in Missouri alone. I think nationwide it's comparable. Let me ask you specifically, how would you attract businesses to Missouri as governor?
Well, Texas in many ways has shown the model. You roll out the red carpet, not through special deals and crony capitalism, which is what Jay Nixon has been trying and failing, exactly your analogy. What you do is you build a business-friendly environment. That includes right to work as one pillar. It includes a business-friendly judiciary, and in Missouri we have one of the most hostile environments to be sued in the country. It includes a tax code that's not punitive to business and investment, places like Tennessee that don't have an income tax. And it includes reducing the regulatory burden, because that is one of the business's largest concerns and one of the biggest hidden costs. If it's just too tough to open a business in your state, businessmen won't. I was talking to a guy in southeast Missouri in the healthcare business. He wanted to open a new healthcare facility that would dispose of waste safely and that sort of thing. The Missouri Department of Resources strung him along for two or three years. He tried to do it in his hometown. He went right across the line in Arkansas, opened it up, 50 jobs right down there, and no health risk. In Missouri, we make it so hard for businesses just to function that many just aren't willing to try.
Now, Bill, and for people who just joined in, you're listening to Bill Randles, who's running for governor of Missouri under the Republican ticket. Bill, talk to me and the listeners about stimulus money. We've had so much stimulus money get spread around, and I'm not talking about Solyndra because that's California. I'm talking about Missouri and stimulus money. How has stimulus money created jobs in the state of Missouri?
Well, it hasn't. There's no evidence that it has at all. Just like nationally, even if you were to accept the Obama administration's claims of jobs saved or created, the stimulus nationally has cost $280,000 per job. A breathtaking amount of money. I think most people would rather just be given $280,000 and let them invest it themselves. But those numbers
are
fictitious. Yeah, and here in Missouri, I'll tell you what it's like. It's like saying to a drunk, I know you need to sober up, and I'm going to help you by giving you more liquor. If you have irresponsible government spending, if you have a government model that's not working, the last thing you want to do is hide that beneath a bunch of short-term financial shenanigans. And they're all going to come home to roost, just as you were saying earlier, here in Missouri, and we've got to put our house actually in order. Yes, we are technically a balanced budget state, but there have been all sorts of gimmicks to put off that day of reckoning, from a huge unemployment insurance bill we owe the federal government to a number of other smaller programs. And a lot of this stimulus money, remember, comes with strings attached. So, yes, we get a dollar, but then we're obliged to spend $10 in the out year as part of that program. We're tying ourselves to an anchor with this money.
talk to the listeners about how stimulus money in Missouri has affected the budget and particularly Medicaid?
Well, Medicaid is the monster in the Missouri budget. We are one of only three states in the nation that spends more than 30% of its state budget on Medicaid alone. We spend 35%, more than twice what we spend on education, more than twice what we spend on law enforcement. If you add together Medicaid, public pensions, and welfare, you're at 60% of the state budget.
Wow.
Federal government money just papers over that. Under Medicaid program, the federal government, depending on the year, provides half or more of the Medicaid money, plus various other special incentives to get you to do what they want. But the trouble is the federal government sets all the standards for Medicaid. And under Obamacare, those standards have been altered so that we're going to see, if it's still in place after tomorrow, a massive increase in the number of people eligible for Medicaid in Missouri anyway. So this is a ticking time bomb for the Missouri budget, whereby Medicaid would swell from 35% to a much larger percentage of the budget if we have to continue down that road.
Well, you're, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Bill Randles talk about the problems that we face as Missourians. And Bill Randles is running for governor of Missouri. The August primary is coming up. What day is that, August 7th?
August 7th.
Okay, the August primary is coming up, and Mr. Randles definitely wants your votes. What we're going to do now is take a short break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the monster in the room, which is Medicare, senior citizens, Obamacare, and that whole burrito. So this is Von Carriker. If you want to call in, the number is 347-677-1835. You are listening to Show Me Common Sense on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Here we are again. This is Von Carriker. You're listening to Show Me Common Sense on the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Guest call-in number is 347-677-1835. We're talking with Bill Randles, Republican candidate for governor for this August 7, 2012 primary. Mr. Randles, let us talk about the monster looming on the horizon. Everybody is on the edges of their seats looking at Obamacare and what the Supreme Court is going to do. What do you think they're going to do?
Well, you know, it. Lawyers know that it's a bit of a fool's errand to try to predict what the Supreme Court's going to do, but I'll give you my odds. I think the chances are virtually nil they will uphold the whole statute. I think it's about 51-49 in favor of tossing the entire statute, but just almost as likely, and in many ways the worst-case scenario, if they toss the individual mandate and pretty much leave the rest intact, because all that now would do is cause the private insurance industry to go bankrupt faster.
Now, there is one insurance company out there, I believe, who announced that even if any part of Obamacare was struck down, they would still follow it. Did I misunderstand them when I read their press release?
Well, that may be the case, but the difference for them would be consumers can't be made to follow it.
Okay. Now, if the individual mandate, the part that requires people to buy coverage or pay a fine every year, if the individual mandate is struck down, the consensus is that will completely gut Obamacare. Why does that create a crisis in Missouri, if it does at all?
Well, it creates a crisis everywhere because eliminating the individual mandate but leaving all of the rest of the rules and restrictions and regulations in place. The regulations, by the way, already run to more than 2.1 million words, more than 2.5 times the length of the Bible. You'd still leave that whole structure in place, micromanaging how we'll do our health care and essentially eliminating health care as a private market and putting it solely within the hands of the government. Eliminating the individual mandate will just make the private insurance industry go bankrupt faster and really get us to what Obama wants faster, which is single payer. But the biggest medium-term danger is what you were talking about, is the damage to Medicare, because Obamacare places such a financial burden on the federal government that they've transferred a bunch of funds from Medicare to pay for Obamacare, and they'll continue that for the short term. Now, what I think they want eventually is a unified single-payer system that does away with Medicare, Medicaid, and puts us all in there, which would be a disaster. But in the medium term, Medicare will continue to suffer cuts, will continue to reduce the number of doctors that want to provide Medicare services, and the waits are going to continue to get longer with these rules that are currently in place and with the financial limitations.
Missouri Republican candidate for governor, Bill Randles. Mr. Randles, waits longer, that's what they do in the Canadian system. That's common in Great Britain and other European countries. Other than that, and is that really a problem? And if that's not, what else is wrong with the single-payer system? And what is the single-payer system for people who are listening?
The single-payer system just means you eliminate any other source to pay for health care other than the federal government. It controls it all. It pays for every service. But remember, it's a universal principle. He who writes the checks makes the rules. So that means
yes,
you have government-controlled health care. You wouldn't be able to determine who your own doctor is. You wouldn't be able to determine what tests you get in consultation with your doctor. You wouldn't be able to go in and say, how about I just pay for that MRI today and we dispense with the insurance? All of that's gone. And so you do have the wait list, but you also have the reduction in the creativity of the system. If you have doctors and healthcare professionals and people that do medical research no longer feeling like they have a chance to reap the rewards of their own labors, they're going to cease to innovate. America has the highest quality healthcare system on earth, in part because there is a profit element. If you invent a new device, you will benefit. If you do land-breaking research, not only do you get credit, you get some reward. The market works, and you suffocate that creativity, and people won't be flocking here. I mean, when people get sick in socialized medicine countries, the elites, where do they always go?
Oh, they come here.
Of course they do. But if we suffocate what makes us makes us better than that, that advantage will go away.
I remember being a law student in Cleveland and the Cleveland Clinic being one of the finer clinics in the country, if not the world. I remember there were times when entire floors of the hospital were taken over by Saudi Arabian sheikhs who were there for procedures. It was stunning. They didn't get that care in an oil-rich country where they can buy literally anything. They could probably buy a doctor and the finest medical teams in the world, but they flew to the United States for care. So
I saw the same thing down in Houston at their medical centers down there. Matter of fact, they had a suite of luxury apartments at the top of the hospital. They called the chic suite because so often what you just described would happen.
Oh, yes, yes. It was a very common thing. Now, I have a tough enough time as a person who pays for insurance herself. I am self-employed. I have a tough enough time as it is getting my insurance company to pay for my medical bills after I pay my deductibles. Bill, what's the difference between that, and is that better right now, the situation that I and many other people have struggling through the insurance red tape to get stuff paid for and approved? Is it harder now than it would be under Obamacare? What would be different?
It would be a lot worse under Obamacare, because if you think it's tough to get a hold of your private insurance company when they know you can go somewhere else, imagine the difficulty you're going to have trying to deal with federal bureaucrats. Picture the post office running your health care, and you'll be pretty close. The same level of indifference and inefficiency.
I tend to have nightmares about the License Bureau.
Same thing. And that's what I think is dangerous. I think a lot of the politicians have presented us with a false choice. They say, our system now has its problems, so do we want this or do we want government control? My answer is, no, we want neither. We want less government control. When I was a kid, we were poor. Our family business was roadside fruit market. We never had health insurance. That was for rich people. But when we got sick, we paid the doctor because we could afford to. Or we paid on time when we went to the hospital. Now, even if you're very prosperous, you don't take that chance because expenses have spiraled out of control precisely because the government has destroyed the market. We need more market forces in, more competition, more insurance companies competing for your business, and more health care providers competing for it. That brings the cost down. That would have been like saying early in the age of the automobile, instead of Henry Ford producing more cars and more car companies competing for our needs, we would just have the government take over and produce one car for everybody. I don't think that would have worked out very well.
I think they did that in the Soviet Union. They have a much beloved and altogether horrible car that's such an icon for poor performance, but that was the car the Soviets drove.
And you would wait for years. And people knew that you wanted to pick it up between Tuesday and Thursday because you didn't want one produced on Monday because people were hungover when they made it. You didn't want one produced on Friday because they were looking for the weekend. And when you came in, you essentially would have a choice between green and black, and you waited for years. You pretty well described what our healthcare system will look like if the government runs it.
Okay, wow. Now, Bill, you're a Republican. Is that correct?
I am.
And Republicans have been demonized by everyone who's not a Republican for the most part. Either you're called Republicans in name only, rhinos, or you're called evil, satanic hellspawn who are dedicated to one purpose, and that is depriving senior citizens of Medicare. Which one is it?
Well, that's one of those have you stopped beating your wife lately questions.
Yes, it is.
I'm a true conservative. Who believes that the most compassionate thing you can do is give people more freedom and let them work out their problems rather than government doing it, because we've sort of seen that all throughout the 20th century of governments controlling every aspect of people's lives, and it didn't work out well for them economically or politically or in terms of their personal safety.
Now, Bill, how do you protect health care for seniors if you become governor, because they are afraid?
Yeah, well, there's no question that we have. I believe that government, there should be a safety net, and the type of safety net should be government doing for those who can't do for themselves, not those who won't do for themselves. And so the elderly, children, the truly disabled, we have to look out for. But we have so many free riders on the system. We have people on disability that we all see out golfing and quite able to work. It's that sort of inefficiency in the system. Just because there are certain people with needs doesn't mean you need a government program that takes away all of our freedom of action. I'll give you an example. You remember those commercials that were on TV a while back with Andy Griffin saying, I can't wait till my Medicare booklet arrives and I can figure out my benefits?
I remember those.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Matlock can afford his own health care. Why are we paying for it?
Because he earned it, remember?
Well, that's the kind of talk that winds up with each of us on the government dole, isn't it?
I think so. You are listening to Show Me Common Sense. We're talking with Bill Randles, the Republican candidate for governor. We're going to take a break here shortly, but before we do, let's go ahead and talk to Thomas from Mountain View. Thomas, you're on live with Bill Randles. Thomas, are you there?
Yes.
You have a question for Mr. Randles.
Yes. I was listening to you talk about jobs and Medicare and stuff like that, but would people be allowed to buy their health insurance out of state and be good here in Missouri? Also,
yes, sir.
What about e-verify so we can catch people that are illegal in the state for trying to get jobs in that. Are we going to use something like that?
Well, in response to your first question, I believe that the competition should be pretty much wide open for insurance companies, responsible insurance companies, to do business in this state. So, yes, I would open it up dramatically to out-of-state competition. I think you need more competition, not less. I'm a little concerned about E-Verify, since it places another level of government requirement on every employer. I'm a little concerned that we're moving the responsibility of government to businessmen and requiring them to hop through hoops before we hire people. And that makes me a little bit nervous that the federal government will get to pass on every employment decision in the country. That smells a little too big brother-like to me.
Now, Thomas from Mountain View asked a question about health insurance, and he also talked about the issue of E-Verify. Now, I have to ask you something. You talked about opening up the market, and thank you, Thomas, for calling. We appreciate those questions. They were both very excellent questions. My understanding is that I can get car insurance from just about any state in the country, but I can only get health insurance from Missouri. Am I incorrect on that?
More or less. You basically, in Missouri, has to be a company approved to do business here or basically owned by a business here. So while your billing address may be out of state, your company has to be a Missouri company or have Missouri offices. The rules are a little convoluted. My view is open it up and let companies compete. And, again, take that artificial barrier off, and you'll see costs come down.
You're listening to Bill Randles on Show Me Common Sense, the Missouri Grassroots Network. I'm Von Carriker. We're going to take a quick break, but if you want to talk to Mr. Randles, ask him a question. The number is 347-677-1835. We're going to be gone for about a minute, and when we come back, we're going to tackle legislation and judicial reform with Bill Randles, Republican candidate for Missouri governor, on Show Me Common Sense. This is the Missouri Grassroots Network.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Hello, this is Von Carriker. You are listening to Show Me Common Sense. Our guest tonight, Republican candidate for Missouri Governor, Bill Randles. Been having a lot of interesting conversation and learning a lot. We are going to tackle some of the stuff that always fascinates me, the actual campaign. Mr. Randles, you are giving them a good old-fashioned behind-the-woodshed country beating in these straw polls. Is that about right?
The straw polls have been very good. The latest one was at the state convention where they polled the delegates from all around the state, and I received 67% to my closest opponent's 31%.
So who is your biggest competition in this race, in the Republican primary?
There's a fellow named Dave Spence from St. Louis. He's a wealthy guy who was involved in manufacturing plastic bottles for a number of years, and he's a self-funding multimillionaire. And so when a guy's got that big a checkbook, you have to take at least his ability to buy ads and stuff seriously.
I thought that Peter Kinder was going to be your competition.
You know, he decided not to run. I started running 18 months ago, January of 11, because I wanted to get around the state and meet everybody I could and let them hear my message. And I never thought he was going to get in, but he was the expected nominee. But October of last year, he decided for various reasons that had come out in the press that it wouldn't be a good idea for him to run.
Okay, I understand that. Now, sir, what's the next event for you?
My next event is I have some business in Kansas City tomorrow, radio interview tomorrow night, and then the next 2 days I'll be in Southwest Missouri at a tea party and at a Republican women's event, and then we get the 4th of July parades.
Okay. I'm going to touch on one of my favorite subjects, which is the tea party. I'm a big fan of the tea party, as many people know, and I have yet to find that it is full of rednecks, sloping forehead, racists, and Klansmen. I love the idea of having a viable third political party, because my opinion is that there is no functional difference right now between the Republicans and the Democrats who are currently running this state and this country. What is your position? And feel free to disagree with me. How do you view the Tea Party?
I think one may have been able to argue there wasn't a difference a few years ago. I think thanks to Barack Obama, he's pulled the Democratic Party so hard left. The question for the Republican Party is, what do we want to be? And I think the Tea Party is the conscience of the Republican Party, calling us back to the principles that people like Reagan espoused. And so I think they have been nothing but good for us and will continue to be good for us. And what I want is to roll out the red carpet to them and say, not only are you welcome in this party, come in, sit down, put your feet up. We really treasure you. And I think that's got to be our attitude. And in terms of the redneck nonsense, as you know, my wife is black. We have been all over the state, spoken to innumerable groups. And as I've said, the only danger she's ever in is getting sore from being hugged.
I can believe that. I've met her. She is a lovely lady. And, of course, whip smart. Whip smart. Now,
absolutely.
Let me ask you something. Since you're an attorney, your wife's an attorney, I'm an attorney, how are we doing by our Missouri citizens in the legislature and in the judiciary?
Well, I think in the judiciary we're failing pretty badly. The Missouri, so-called Missouri nonpartisan court plan was a well-intentioned idea. The idea was to take politics out of the judiciary. The truth is, the American system is so built that you can't take politics out of anything. All you do is you move it to a back room if it's not out in the open. And that's what's happened. As you well know as a lawyer, under the so-called nonpartisan plan, which is supposed to be merit-based, every lawyer in the area knows who's going to be on the list that goes to the governor. Every lawyer knows most of the time who the governor's going to pick. So I think the politics need to be out in the open and accountable to the people. The result of our program has been that we have so insulated the judiciary from ordinary folks' concerns that it's sort of become, you know, a place where the special interests of certain groups, particularly the plaintiffs' lawyers, are played out, and it's really done a lot of damage to Missouri businesses.
Now, a lot of people say that tort reform has been the biggest thing to hit Missouri citizens in a long time. And I think the point of tort reform was to limit people from having recovery on outrageous cases. Has tort reform in Missouri accomplished its goal of limiting frivolous lawsuits while maintaining justice for people in the state of Missouri who have legitimate injuries?
Only in part. It has capped damages, but as you know, there are a number of ways to get around that. But frivolous litigation is still a huge problem in Missouri because, you know, say right now you have a business and I have a case, I sue you, and there's no basis to the lawsuit. But if you go to your insurance company, they're going to say, well, this lawsuit's going to cost about $30,000 to defend. We'll probably win, but you never know. So we'll offer to settle it for nuisance value of $30,000. So a person with no valid lawsuit gets a reward. The lawyer bringing it gets a reward, and the costs are passed on to you in higher insurance costs, and you have to pass them on to everybody. Every transaction we have in the state of Missouri has two hidden taxes, a union tax and a lawyer tax, and that's really strangling our economy, and we need to pull those back. So I think we need tort reform that will really discourage frivolous lawsuits, and the best way to do that is a loser-pays system.
And when you mean lose or pay, are you talking about a person who maybe has been injured in an accident but not seriously, who's entitled to some recovery but not a huge windfall, or are you talking about what? What does that mean?
No, if a person's just entitled to a small amount of damages and wins a small amount of damage, they're a winner. I mean the kind of case where somebody brings a frivolous lawsuit, everybody knows it's frivolous, it goes through the system, and they lose. Then they should have to pay not only their attorney's fees, but the person they brought it against. That would discourage the bringing of the frivolous suits. A loser pays tort system would have nothing, would have no impact on meritorious suits. It would just mean that we're evaluating suits based on their merit, not based on their cost of defense.
Now, how's that going to discourage ambulance chasers? Because no matter how it shakes out, it sounds like the loser is going to pay their attorney whether or not they win.
Oh, no. I would make the loser pay system. I would make the plaintiff and the lawyer jointly and severally liable, meaning that the defendant could collect against the lawyer and would probably find that easier in most cases.
Ouch.
That would make them think twice.
Okay, all right. I'm going to stop. 347-677-1835. You're listening to Missouri Republican candidate Bill Randles tell us how he's going to crack down on bad lawyers who file frivolous lawsuits by making them responsible for paying if they lose. That is novel. I'd be interested to see how that shook out. You'd probably eliminate plaintiff's practice for most people in the state of Missouri, wouldn't you?
Well, I think that there are plenty of lawsuits that we all know as lawyers have a certain value, and you would file those for value. But it is those frivolous lawsuits, it's the nonsense, it's the, you know, it's the drunk guy who runs over a cop and a bystander and then sues them when he trips getting out of his car. It's that sort of nonsense that we can eliminate.
Okay. I remember reading a case not too long ago, and I don't think it was a Missouri case, about a guy who kidnapped two people and then sued them because they didn't keep him safe when he got arrested and maybe beaten up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of stuff is what you're talking about. Is that correct?
That's the sort of nonsense we've got to flush out. Because the thing that people don't realize is often those guys recover. Often they get a settlement because of the cost of defending the suit just to go away. That's the sort of thing we have to flush out of the system because that costs all of us.
Nuisance money is what you're talking about.
Nuisance money that after a while adds up to real money.
Okay. Now let me ask you something. Missouri did something very interesting not too long ago. They went to a pro se representation system for people in domestic cases, divorces in particular. Have you seen anything to indicate that that process has been working out for petitioners who maybe want to get a divorce, they can't afford the prolonged fighting, or maybe they've worked it out for themselves and they want to file it themselves? Have you seen that working in Missouri?
You know, I don't think it's gone on long enough to evaluate whether it's accomplished its goal, but it's the right idea. We should have, in simple matters, routine matters, where people just need their basic business accounted for, an ability for ordinary citizens to go in and not incur the expense of an attorney and the delay of litigation. Divorce is one thing that ought to be much less litigious, much more simplified, and have fewer delays and involvement. This is one of those areas where if people think there is a benefit to being contentious, it will breed contention in and of itself. So I think that is the right idea. I have some additional ideas along that front, but I think that's the way to go.
Now, I've seen cases. I've actually sat in court and seen people actually wrestling with the pro se, the do-it-yourself divorce. And I've actually gone online and downloaded the forms and taken a look at them. What is it, 60 pages, 65 pages? And
yeah, it's still too much.
It's a little too much. I've actually seen judges throw people out because they don't know what they're doing. That's a lot of work to put into something to make it to the court date and be told that you need to go hire an attorney.
Yeah,
is there any way that we can
yeah.
streamline the system as it is?
I think that one way you streamline it is essentially have the forms built into the statute. And you know we do that on a few statutes. Just if you open up the statute or look it up, there are 3, 4, 5 pages, nothing long, and have it very simple, really limit the court's discretion in what they do. 99.9% of divorces or wills or other simple matters should be crystal clear, automatic, and the rules clear. They should not be a morass of confusion.
I would agree with you. Now, I'm going to ask you one or two more questions, and they're actually going to be talking, they're going to be related to your campaign. You still have a minute to call, Mr. Randall, so the number is 347-677-1835. What do you need, and what do you think will get you over the hump to win the Republican primary, or do you think that's already a foregone conclusion?
Well, no, I don't take anything for granted. I was in my life, you don't put anything in the win column till it's done. But I believe people can do two things. Those who listen and like my message and are in a position to can go online to my website, BillRandles.com, and they can help us out financially. And, you know, lots of people doing small things adds up to a lot. So $10, $20, $50, whatever people can do would be much appreciated. But then also online, we have a sheet where we invite people to join the fight. And you can let us know what you have the time for. If you can go to events, you can check it. If you're willing to pass out literature or walk, you can let us know. If you're willing to put up a yard sign. Because in the primary, I believe your neighbors are going to rely on the folks who listen to these kind of programs to be informed. And when you say, well, here's the guy you vote for, I think that has a big impact. So those who can help materially can, but those who can't can help spread the word.
Now, you've traveled all over the state of Missouri thus far. Have you traveled it more than once, I would think?
Yes, I put something like 70,000 miles on my vehicle in the last 18 months just within the state. That'll get you around the globe at the equator almost 3 times.
Now, has anyone asked you a question that you couldn't answer?
Not so far.
Now, what's the biggest fear that Missourians out there have that you've learned about in your 70,000 miles of travel?
I think there is a fear in people's mind, a worry, that whether things have gone too far for us to turn it around. And I've seen a lot of excitement in my campaign, some coming from people who previously had thought, we can't get these things turned around. We're too far gone. We're heading toward Greece. We're heading toward Spain. I don't believe that. I believe that we still have a chance to turn these things around. Americans have always done the right thing when our back has been against the wall. Winston Churchill once said, you can always count on Americans to do the right thing once they've exhausted every other option. And I think we've pretty much done that.
Now, we've had some brouhaha here locally about the teachers' pension and efforts being made to gut those allegedly and maybe transfer those over to other funds for other state employees. What's your position on the teachers' pensions?
Look, I believe long-term state pensions have to get more in line with the private sector and move toward IRAs and such. But I believe you keep your word. If you made a deal with people, you keep it. You may have to change future arrangements, but you keep the deals you've already made. I believe in the sanctity of contract.
Would you touch the teachers' pensions?
No.
Now, this area that I live in, is or was a hotbed of construction, commercial construction, private home construction. I used to drive into work downtown, and there was always a house being built somewhere along the way. Got a lot of contractors out of work. What would you do for them as governor?
Well, again, my policies, by and large, are not geared toward one industry because I think we've gotten into these problems together. And an industry-by-industry approach doesn't really work. You loosen the labor laws on those contractors. You reduce their fear of frivolous litigation, which will drop their insurance rates. You reduce the number of regulations that tie their hands, and then turn them loose and see what happens.
Now, you said once in a speech that the federal government produces, what, 10 new regulations every day?
That's correct. Under the Obama administration, we have produced 10 new federal regulations a day, every day they've been in office.
Now, how would you as governor address the regulatory climate in Missouri? Because I can tell you, and I'll tell this to the listeners, I've told this before, one guy, one employee, missing work, late or not at all, showing up 27 times because he was drunk or hungover. He didn't mean to miss work, and when he filed for unemployment, he got it because he didn't mean to miss work. How do you deal with regulations like that when you become governor?
I plan to deal with regulations wholesale. If you deal with them retail, you will always lose because the growth will overcome whatever you're trying to reform. Between my election and inauguration, we'll go through the whole regulatory law of the state of Missouri. Every regulation that's out of date, expensive, just plain stupid, we will strike it. I'll give that package to the legislature and say, pass this as the regulatory law of the state of Missouri, and then do something no state's ever done. Take away the power of the regulators to make any new rules. I believe that a Republican form of government requires that anyone who can pass a rule that will bind you is someone you can vote for and you vote against. Missouri will become the first state to end the regulatory state.
And then after that, you're going to take on the federal government. How do you plan on doing that?
Well, you push back against the federal government one area at a time. For example, we're going to have to say no to some federal money that comes with unacceptable strings, like education money, like their money whereby they pay us so that the Department of Natural Resources enforces the EPA's rules. Longer term, I intend to provoke a challenge with the federal government because, well, I do not believe that the Constitution ever envisioned that regulations passed by unelected bureaucrats could supersede state laws passed through the constitutional process. So I intend to provoke that sort of battle with the federal government and take it to the Supreme Court to find out the boundaries of federalism.
Okay, we got about a minute left. Let me ask you, do you think you can beat the Democratic challenger if you make it past the primary?
I do. You know, something, he won in 2008, but something very important happens in 2008, and that was 2010, where this state took such a hard turn to the right. Barack Obama, who lost Missouri by 2 points in 2008, has announced he won't even campaign here. He won't spend a dime, he won't open an office, and he won't send an employee. This state has changed. It's ready for a Republican sweep. If we have the right ideas, we can win and we can change things.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think I'm a fan. And I like to ask a lot of questions, and you've answered them all. Bill Randles, thank you for joining us tonight on Show Me Common Sense. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it was my honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
And good luck in your campaign, sir. We wish you the best.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have listened to Bill Randles, Missouri Republican candidate for governor, on Show Me Common Sense. I am Von Carriker. I am wishing you good night. Good luck. Take care.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.